94.5 WELY, it's our weekly wilderness update, brought to you by the BWCAW Coalition, funded by Lake County and St. Louis County. And I am joined today by Darren Vogt, Resource Management Division Director with 1854 Treaty Authority. Darren, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Happy to chat.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. So I think a lot of people are familiar with what the state of Minnesota, their Department of Natural Resources, does to manage resources. Maybe not quite so familiar with what the 1854 Treaty Authority does. Could you give us a little bit of the background?
Sure. So, yeah, the short answer is we're kind of like the DNR, but for two bands. So we're governed by the Boyce Board and Grand Portage Bands. So under the Treaty of 1854, bands retained the right to hunt, fish, and gather in the 1854 ceded territory. And this ceded territory covers present-day northeastern Minnesota. So again, our organization is governed by the Boyce Board and Grand Portage Bands, and we work to preserve and enhance treaty rights and related resources in that ceded territory. So we manage the off-reservation hunting, fishing, trapping, and gathering seasons for Boyce Board and Grand Portage. But then we also work to protect the resources that are important for the exercise of treaty rights. So we have programs in wildlife, fisheries, wild rice, environment, climate change, and invasive species. So we're really interested in anything going on or affecting that that ceded territory.
Well, it's some pretty important stuff there. We obviously really value our natural resources here in this region. So not only deer, moose populations, but also, you know, the walleye in the lakes, and of course wild rice, which is so dependent. We talked a lot about over the course of this segment. We've been talking a lot about the watershed and water quality, and obviously that plays a big factor in the quality of wild rice.
Correct. Yep. Water quality is definitely one important factor in what affects wild rice. And so, yeah, there are many other threats. And, you know, water levels is another thing that has a big impact on wild rice. Wild rice really likes that shallow water, 1 to 3 feet of water depth, and grows best in kind of those mucky areas is kind of the ideal spot for it. So water levels and water quality are definitely things important to the long-term success of wild rice.
So when you talk about water levels, in particular this summer, we are experiencing some pretty severe drought conditions. What effect does that have on the wild rice crop?
Yeah, good question. Typically, years where you have these shallow water years, generally they're good for wild rice. Mm-hmm. Again, that shallow water is important for wild rice, so you get these shallow early seasons wild rice germinates and grows well. This year, generally, wild rice is looking good. The potential problem is access. A lot of areas are looking perhaps low or maybe even too low to get in there for harvesters. So maybe conditions can change yet before harvest. But again, the low water is generally good for wild rice, but may not always be good for the harvesters trying to get in there.
So can you talk specifically about some of the conservation activities that are used to protect and preserve the wild rice?
Sure. Again, water levels is critical. So, you know, top of the list is any kind of water level management. In kind of natural areas, that often means beaver management, beaver control. So if there's an area that has a long-term beaver problem, beaver dams that are raising water levels, you know, that'd be a priority. You should take care of that.
Sure.
So that's kind of an ongoing battle is dealing with beavers. But also any changes to lake outlets, if the culvert has been changed, or a human made dam, things like that have changed water levels. Those are things we try to track to make sure that that water level remains, you know, suitable for wild rice. So that's kind of top of the list. Other things that can be done, we do some wild rice reseeding. Typically, this is more of a last ditch effort. Again, first step is to get conditions good for wild rice growth. Typically, there's a viable seed bank that remains. So once conditions are good for wild rice will kind of sprout on its own again. But again, if it's been lost a long time in an area or we're trying to get wild rice growing in a new area, reseeding is occasionally used as well.
Okay.
The other thing, too, is competing vegetation and invasive species, things like that can be an issue for wild rice. And so any kind of control and management of those things is also on the table when needed.
So when we talk about the harvesting of wild rice, so I've been doing a little bit of research on this. We've made some flails. We've looked into the permit process. We've tracked down some areas where there might be wild rice. What more do we need to know before we head out and attempt to harvest wild rice?
Yeah, so wild rice harvest occurs when the plants are ripe. And so that's late August, early September in northeastern Minnesota. So we always try to stress the importance of making sure those seeds are ripe and ready for harvest, so we do no damage to the plant. But yeah, it's harvested by two people in a canoe. One person pushes the canoe through the rice, usually with a push pole. Sometimes you see people paddling. And the other uses two small sticks, as you mentioned, called knockers or flails, to brush the ripe wild rice into the canoe. So with one stick, you pull some stalks over the edge of the canoe. With the other, you gently give it a brush or two and basically dislodge those ripe rice kernels into the bottom of your canoe. And rice does ripen at varied time within a lake and across different lakes, so a certain bed of rice can be harvested multiple times over a season as it kind of continues to ripen.
And so what's the best way to tell if the rice is actually ripe?
It's tough. It's definitely a judgment call. You know, my rule of thumb is you want those seeds to be pretty firm and solid, or even, you know, if you take a look at the seeds at the end of the plant, you want them to be firm, that they just really fall off the stalk easily. You don't want them to be empty hulls or milky hulls that are still developing. You just want them to easily fall off. Again, you're maximizing your effort, and then you're not doing any damage to the plants.
So once you've found your ripe rice and you've got it into your canoe, there's another long process after that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Correct. That once you harvest it, rice is not ready for consumption. It has to be finished, it's called. So the traditional way is to, there's a long process of drying it, parching it, hulling it, and then winnowing or fanning it. So that gets it ready for consumption or storage. People do still do it that traditional way, or other people have often bring their rice to wild rice processors who have developed mechanized means to complete that, so they usually charge a fee for things like that. And so a lot of ricers do use processors as well.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause again, it is a long process, the drying process and then the winnowing. And personally, to have taken part with some elders from Boys Fort in actually doing some parching of wild rice, I have a real respect for the time that goes into processing it. And then once you get that final product, there's very little else in the world that compares to the taste of real hand-parched wild rice.
That's correct. Definitely an art form and a skill. And, just some awareness, too. A lot of rice you find in roadside stands and stores is from cultivated wild rice. Mm-hmm. So that's typically your blacker-looking wild rice. And, we think that the natural wild rice is, a better product and better tasting. So just, I always remind people to at least know the difference when you're purchasing wild rice.
So can you talk about if someone is going out looking to find some wild rice, what sort of areas would you look for the rice in?
So again, it's really those shallow lakes and rivers that your focus is. And it's tough, if you don't really know where wild rice is found, where do you start? We do provide some resources here at the 1854 Treaty Authority. We have a website with wild rice condition updates each season. So we make that available to band members and the public, and so help give people an idea where to go out harvesting. So I invite people to check that out.
And so despite our drought conditions, because as you mentioned, the rice tends to prefer lower water levels, it does sound like we could have a very good wild ricing season.
Yep, again, across northeastern Minnesota, it's looking, a fair to good year for the most part.
Well, that's good to hear, because for those of us up here that do a lot of foraging, it's not been a great year for berries or mushrooms so much, but it's good to hear that we've got a potential for some good wild ricing.
Right, and again, that access is going to be the key, so it doesn't hurt to check ahead a little bit to see what kind of water levels you're dealing with.
For sure. And you mentioned some resources. Can you tell us the website for the 1854 Treaty Authority?
Sure. It's w1854treatyauthority.org. Then you can navigate to the wild rice pages, and there's a page for wild rice condition updates. And we have a bunch of photos on there as well to keep an idea.
Excellent. Well, maybe we can check back in with you after the season is over and kind of get a little update on how the overall harvest and processing has been going.
Sounds good.
Well, I really appreciate it. Darren Vogt is the Resource Management Division Director with the 1854 Treaty Authority. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thanks much. Appreciate it.
Yes, it's a pleasure. And our Wilderness Update is brought to you by the BWCAW Coalition in partnership with federal, state, nonprofit, and business organizations to help prevent the introduction of aquatic invasive species into the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. You are in tune to the End of the Road Radio, 94.5 WELY.